Hello and welcome to the Android Developers Backstage podcast. I'm Tor Norby from the Android Studio team.
I'm Chet Haas from the Android Developer Relations team.
What? Wait a minute, that's different.
Huh?
Yeah. What happened there?
I thought I would go do the thing that I was kind of doing anyway.
No, so the real story is every time we do a podcast together, I don't have a name for my team. So what I did is I took Chet's team. So hi, I'm Romain Guy from the Android Toolkit team.
And then there wasn't room enough for me, so I went elsewhere. And right. You know what? We actually have somebody
else
on the
podcast. Game of Thrones. Okay. Yes. And?
But more importantly.
Hi, I'm Esteban de la Canal. I am an engineer in the Android Studio team.
All right. Repeat guest again.
Yeah. We talked to you last time about profiling tools.
That's correct.
All right. So we must be talking about that this time, right? That's all you do.
No.
No? What are we talking about?
We're going to talk about Apply Changes, the replacement of Instant Run in Android Studio 3.5.
Wait, apply what? Apply Changes?
Apply Changes. That's
okay, so you replaced even the name of it.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, it turns out doing something instant is pretty complicated.
I was going to say, is it called Apply Changes just so that we don't make any promises about the time it takes?
It's to not deliver a false promise of it being instant, yes.
I like the idea of our attempt to become instant is actually taking a long time. I think it's a good metaphor for something.
Indeed.
Okay, so maybe let's start at the beginning. So we have Instant Run, or we had Instant Run?
This is
a replacement? Like, yes, Instant Run is gone.
Instant Run will be gone. It's gone in 3.5. Right now in the Canary channel, it's available. And Apply Changes replaces it completely. We removed all Instant Run, not the code, but we are removing all Instant Run features from Android Studio. Yep. And it's a replacement only for Android O and P and above. But it completely replaces Instant Run.
So you already touched on a key difference here, I think, between Instant Run and Apply Changes. So, I mean, we can talk more about how Instant Run worked, but Instant Run was backward compatible, right? It didn't require a specific version of the platform.
Correct. So that was one of the major challenges when we were designing Instant Run, was how can we implement this without changing the platform? At the same time, we started working with the platform to get the support we needed so that we could implement this through them. And over the years, Android O and P became more popular, so we could design a solution that only targeted those phones.
And why was that important for those platforms? Like, what is it about those releases that enables this kind of feature?
So maybe we could talk about how Instant Run worked, right?
Sure. Okay.
So Instant Run basically worked by modifying the build of your app. So we would instrument the app at compile time and add hooks so that when you made changes to your app, we could use those hooks in the already running app to patch your app.
Can you give me an example so I can actually picture what you're talking about with the hooks?
So imagine you change the body of a function and you change the implementation of it. Instead of sending the entire APK and reinstalling your app, what we did with Instant Run 1 was we sent just a bit of code that was changed. But the original code was instrumented to have essentially an if at the beginning saying, if I have a new implementation, I will use that. Otherwise, I'll use the previous one. And every method was instrumented like that.
Every method. Wow.
Okay. You know, we had that 64K method handle limit in Android. Yeah. This helped burn a lot of that budget, right? So the failures you would see sometimes was you couldn't build because you had run out of method handles. And that was because of our expensive instrumentation.
So we had, right. So we're adding more method handles.
Yeah.
Right. Interesting. So everything was going through this like second deref to get to the actual code that was running.
Correct. Everything that had a patch applied to it.
Okay. And this is to be clear, this is on the debug build, right? Not the release build.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. All right.
The difference was in O, the platform implemented Bicon instrumentation on the fly, so we can actually change the DEX class of a running app by attaching an equivalent of JVMTI in Java. So we can attach an agent and say, can you swap this class with this one?
Okay, so it's at the class level. It's not at the body level.
Correct. It's at the class level.
Okay, so we're sending down more code, and if you're writing like vRoot impl, you're going to be sending down... Like, you could be sending out huge amounts of code that take longer to build and send down, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But that also means that we're sending the code you actually wrote and compiled, because what we used to do in Instant Run was modifying the code, which I assume, I mean, that's what you said, right? Like, we're burning methods, and I assume, like, it could have a lot of other problems potentially.
Yeah, and there's another difference in the implementation of apply changes that we decided to take it at an APK level so that we do not depend on any build system modifications, so that this works with Gradle or with any other form of getting an APK. The way it works is we will fetch the previous APK from the phone and compare the contents of that APK. We don't fetch the entire APK, we only fetch the table of content of the APK and compare with what was just built, so that we can get the DEXs that have changed, and then we inspect the DEXs. I can go into more detail on all of this.
I would like that, because if we're just looking at the contents, then how do we know that it changed? Is there a SHA associated with every class?
Yeah, so previously on Instant Run, that sounds like a movie, previously on Instant Run.
And it was drama,
very boring,
I can tell you.
Very boring movie.
No, it was dramatic, let me tell you.
What we did was we used the build system knowledge of what has changed from the previous build to build. But if you had two devices, and if you push to one, and then you want to push to the other one, the delta didn't match. So we decided to do the new pipeline completely stateless, so that you build, you get your APK, and then you fetch from the device the table of content. The APKs are zip files, right? So we fetch a table of content, and we compare the two APKs, the one that was just built and the one that is on device. We detect which files have changed. And if we have DEX differences, we extract every DEX and extract every class and do a checksum of every class and compare which classes have changed.
Does that include a round trip then for each file? Or does the...
No, because what we do is we take advantage of the previous time we pushed. So when you run for the first time in studio, we push the APK. And after that's done in the background, we start uncompressing the DEXs, get all the classes, and get a checksum of all the classes that have changed. So the next time, we already know what happened with the previous APK. The only thing we need to fetch is, do we know the APK on device? Yes. So that we know all the checksums of every class. And then we only compare, we do host-side comparison of the two DEXs that have changed. The more DEXs the APK has, the faster this is. So the only, it's not a change, but the only guideline to the build system that wants to run fast with apply changes is to have many DEXs and not just one.
Yeah, when you're saying many DEXs, you mean many smaller as opposed to...
Yes.
Just take a large number of DEXs and
so
add to
them. So how about one DEX per class?
That would blow the number of DEXs you can have, because I believe there is a limit of 100 DEXs hard-coded somewhere.
I thought we had increased it, because I remember, I think it was PY at Square ran into this, and I remember he showed me the code in our source tree, and you could see like for I equals 0 to 100, and we changed that number. I don't know. I'm sure there's a limit, but...
But if the DEXs are small in a few hundred... then it's almost immediate to compare them.
So yeah, I was going to ask, like, does that mean there's it's challenging to do those comparison and extractions like really quickly on the host, or is that just
for a small DEX? It takes in the order of 80 or 100 milliseconds on a MacBook Pro to do the comparison on a small DEX. We use D8 to extract every class and compare if an implementation has changed. The benefit from this is it completely isolates us from any crazy build plugin that could be there.
Right, because you work at the DEX level, so yes. It doesn't matter. You don't have to look at the source.
So we happen to work with frameworks that we didn't know we didn't work before, like Dagger 2 or data binding. It just works.
So what kinds of changes do you allow? Method body changes, obviously. Are there anything else that you see that you can support?
We support, and by we, I mean the R team supports swapping, the same that Java supports swapping. That is, you can swap method bodies. That's it. The list is very short.
Well, that makes sense, because if you change the data layout, I mean, you're going to run into a ton of problems.
Exactly.
But so, there are operations that don't change the data layout. Like, you could add methods.
Right.
It would change the vtable of the object, so it could be a lot of problems. So the main, you know, one of we're already starting getting feedback, and people are saying, "Hey, it takes the same amount of time to build." Well, yeah, because you have to build the same things. So we didn't want to take shortcuts, but the benefit of this is to not lose state. So all the objects you have in memory still run, and the new code points to them. So that's why we cannot change method signatures. Imagine you're in the middle of a recursion and you swap the code, you're going to get half of your recursion on the new code and half on the old code. So it's important that these things, and it's the same restrictions that Java has had for the last 20 years.
So I'm picturing sort of three phases of doing a build and push right now, where it builds the APK, you know, with all of the dependencies that I changed, and then it pushes it, and then you navigate in the app to get to the state that you wanted to. So what you're doing is drastically shortening the second and the third one, right? So the first phase basically doesn't change. You're doing a full incremental build.
We're definitely shortening the third one.
Yep.
In the second one, we have what we call delta push.
Right.
That we made some changes on P as well to make installation faster. But we also made changes so that when we fetch the table of content of the APK and we know which files have changed, we know what we can push. So we only push, we essentially do a binary diff assisted by the table of content of the APK, and we only push the bits that have changed, and we reassemble the APK on device.
Okay. I just want to point out that Delta Push is like a really cool name that they should have for like a military.
So it does sound like the name of a movie.
Cool. So I wanted to rewind. I'm probably confused. I think it's a good assumption.
Really?
You said we can update on a class file basis, but you were talking about updating the method body still, which is the way we used to do on an instant run. So what are we doing?
I was talking about at runtime.
We send class files.
Yeah.
We send a new class.
Yeah.
The API for swapping classes is give me the previous class, I'll give you the new one.
Right. So it's not at the method body level. So then what were you asking about?
But it fails for almost everything except when you only change method bodies.
If you give a new class and it is like change the type of a field, all the objects in the heap are going to have a problem if you suddenly change what the class is doing.
Okay. So it sounds like there is a large class of problems that what trip over a wire and it says I can't do a push of this and I'm going to do a full one instead?
No. So another difference with instant run. With instant run, we try to save the user time by saying, oh, we couldn't swap, so we're going to reinstall. But sometimes getting to the state of your app that you want it to be was the most difficult thing. So if by us just deciding to restart their app, they're losing all that state.
Yeah.
Imagine you changed a field and you tried to swap and it fails. Then you have the chance to undo it and keep the state of your app. So with Apply Changes, we decided not to automatically reinstall your app and let you decide what you want to do. So we just say, sorry, we cannot swap because you added a new field or a new method.
Yeah, so you can decide to not add that new field and put stuff in line inside the methods just to work on your algorithm.
So you just pop a dialogue saying, this is not going to work too well.
Correct.
Do you want us to go ahead?
Correct. And this is not, you know, this is how we've been using Java hot swap in IntelliJ itself for many, many years. IntelliJ says, sorry, I couldn't hot swap. And
okay.
Thank you so much.
So we send class files and we reassemble on the device, but there's a lot of things between, you know, Android Studio or the compiler and getting to the device. Like we have ADB and there's the package manager. Like, did you do other kinds of optimizations like along the way to like transfer faster or?
So the first thing we push a native executable to the phone and we talk directly to that executable.
Okay.
And
so it's a daemon of some kind.
And that is the process that actually calls to the package manager to install. So we will not directly talk. We had a lot of round trips from studio that we would go and say ADB shell something. Now we push this and talk to it directly. This is the one that understands the binary diffs and can reassemble the APK and things like that. We obviously still have to go through ADB and ADB push and all of those things, but we try to minimize that connection.
Okay. So I remember something from Instant Run about there being a server running in the device so that you had a place where you could actually send the bits down. Is that basically a new version of that same thing, the daemon?
We have two parts. One is the daemon that interacts with the framework to install itself, and the other one is the agent that we attach to the app. The app is essentially unmodified, so any debuggable app, we can attach Instant Run and try to swap on it. So imagine you have any build system that builds two different APKs. You can install one and then try to swap the other one on top. The server that runs on the app is not part of the app anymore. It doesn't affect any lifecycle, nor is linked to an activity.
It's part of art, right?
It's part of art. Our agent attaches to art, and we open a socket and we talk directly to it. But there's no the app cannot see this.
It's a much better architecture. In the old days, we had to go and insert stuff into the manifest. And we had issues with like who gets loaded first, our server or the user's code. And now it's basically fixed. So it's I think the nice thing here of paring down the support to just, what is it, 0 and above?
Yes.
You know, you get to do really clean architecture, and the app, the build system, they all do exactly the same thing as without apply changes.
And the fact that it's 0 and above, I mean, if you're going to use apply changes, I assume it's going to be for things like you're tweaking the UI or, like I said, an algorithm of some kind. So you can do this on the emulator, for instance, and then you do full testing on all the versions of the platform you support. But
yes, there's something else that we can do now. That is, we can handle multiple profiles on your app or on your phone, or we can handle multiple processes. So you can also swap tests. And we treat it the same way. The Delta Push will tackle the app and will notice that the app has not changed. So you can hot swap, essentially. If you had a long running test, you could hot swap it until you get it passing very, very quickly.
Oh, yeah, that's actually really nice.
And there is not an entirely different pipeline, but there is an entirely different problem, that is swapping resources. So we also change the way resources are.
Okay, so I'd like to understand how resources worked on Instant Run. I was going to ask about that anyway, right? Because that's a big problem where, you know, you change this one little attribute and it has big repercussions.
Yes. So if I remember correctly, we would, in Instant Run, we would just reinstall the app.
I can talk about this because I worked on that part. For resources, it was reflection hacks galore. Right, so our server would basically know we had changed the way the app resources loading happened, and then we would receive new resources, and then we would basically put those in place, and we'd call a bunch of reflective calls to make the framework switch where it was reading its resources from, and then we would call some more APIs to clear some caches, and then a third API to restart activity, and that worked, you know, in a number of cases, but not all. And we had a bunch of reflective calls. These were unsupported APIs that changed. So we had, you know, if you're on API level 15, do this. If 17, do that. And we kept getting bugs.
And it could create issues potentially with different OEMs or...
And that's good that it can change, happened too, that we discovered that on this device, you know, some manufacturers changed this API, so their signature is wrong. Oof. Right? So it worked for some, you know, set of cases, but it was
some
very...
definition of work.
It was very hacky.
So you said we would actually restart the activity then as well. So all we were doing was saving at the build time. We weren't actually like launching in the
same for resource changes, you do have to restart activity. And I believe that's even true now. So let's ask us about how this works now.
Yes, we could not remove all the hacks. Obviously, some of the things that were done in Instant Run are still needed.
Which means they were not hacks. They were so good. The code was so good, you kept it.
So what we tried to do is not to take shortcuts. So we decided, because we are on 0 and above, we could make some decisions like we only use the path where you install an app, but there's a flag called no kill so that your app still runs when you install it.
Yeah, I think it might have been Instant Apps. The framework was basically,
that makes sense.
They were forced to do a bunch of cleanup where APK installs with resources sort of forced a bunch of caches to be cleared no matter what. They had to basically fix this to work. And I think you're using a lot of that mechanism. So
we have to, because the resources API that you call from an app when you say get drawable, get color, like has a cache internally. So we don't cache all resources, but some of them. And yeah, if you don't clear those caches when the resource has changed, you're going to get the old version of the resource, which doesn't help you.
So what we do now when we detect that a resource has changed is we install the app like this, and there's a command to restart the activity, but instead of doing that, because we are actually instrumenting the app, we can, from our agent, restart the activity, which we'll call the right APIs that retrigger all the new caches. There's an interesting anecdote here that it's there's some bugs in O that were fixed in P in terms of which caches get cleared. But because we can bycon instrument, the framework itself. So we apply those fixes that were shipped in P. We apply them in O, and we have a platform that works.
Real time system update.
that's super.
Yeah, and I imagine there are still situations like if you do your own caching of resources inside your app and it's not part of the activity, like you have a static cache. I mean, you're gonna run. I mean, you know, Instant Run had the same issue, and it's not magical here. Like,
yes, there's nothing we can do. I mean, if you read a resource and then you save it in the database and you expect apply changes to change your database magically, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, and Jet, you were asking about, you know, we restart the activity, and we kind of have to, because all the places, you know, in the framework or in your app where we load a resource, after we loaded the resource, you know, you have a drawable or a bitmap, we don't know what resource it came from. Like we would have to tag all those objects in the framework and then keep track of them somewhere. And then when the associated resource changes, we would have to like swap the data. So, I mean, it seems a lot safer to just restart the activity.
And I mean, we're saying the activity, but I remember one of the biggest hacks was finding, well, what activity, what is the activity stack?
Yeah.
You know, that was a bunch of reflection
as
well.
It's always more complicated than it seems.
So I was curious about something you said in the previous paragraph. Maybe this is a bad thing to sort of harp on, but you're changing the framework on the fly? Is that allowed? Is it possible?
We are applying fixes that were greenlit in P.
Yeah.
So these are safe fixes.
So I understand that. It's more the mechanism of you change the framework. Like, is this because we have access to permissions on emulator that are not possible on a device? Like,
no, this is because we can Bicon instrument any class that is running.
We as in, like, so is there a special...
So we tools.
Yeah.
The API provided by Art to Bicon instrument user code also works
on
Steven framework
talks
code.
About, has been talking about an agent. So like a JVMTI, for instance, on the JVM, like I wrote some of those agents.
Yeah.
When you start your VM, you say, here's my agent, and you have a special API, and every time a class is loaded, you get all the bytecode, and you can modify it. Before it gets, so it's, but it's inside your process. You're not changing the framework for system UI, or not changing it on disk. It's when the classes get, you know.
Yeah, I just wondered if you were providing like a really interesting hack for app developers to go ahead and change the framework whenever you want to on device.
No, unfortunately, no.
Just make the system partition, you know, world writable and.
Yeah. So what is the mechanism that allows Art to expose this to you to take advantage of it that is specific to this situation? Like, is there some, you know, marriage between the IDE and that Art running on the emulator, or what?
It's an activity manager command to attach an agent to any debuggable app.
Okay.
So if you the JVMTI spec is public, and if you want to write a native agent and do AM attach agent and give it a package name, it'll attach it.
I see. So it's not something that the user's not going to launch a random app in there and be able to, that app have this ability to do this.
No, this is restricted to only debuggable apps.
Right. So, and I was talking about emulators, but it also works for a debug device that you have attached there. You could be running a debuggable version of your app and it's going to have the same capabilities.
Yeah. Yes. Instant Run doesn't only work on the emulator.
Yes. Yeah. Makes sense. Did you say Instant Run doesn't only not quite work on the emulator? But apply changes will.
Yeah.
Apply changes.
Awesome. Okay. So what did we...
You said, so apply changes in 3.5 Canary 1, right?
Yes. That in the first Canary of 3.5, it's...
Because 3.3 was just released as a stable release.
Yeah. And 3.4 is, I think, shipping as beta already. By the time we release this podcast, we'll probably be up to Canary 2 or 3, I would think. We release Canaries on a weekly basis, and we usually take about 2 weeks to release our podcast.
So what do I have to do if I want? So I need to download 3.5 Canary 1, I load my project, and then what do I do? Because in CentRun, there was a separate, it replaced the run button, right?
We changed our mind about that. But
okay.
So, we've been discussing that you want to restart your app or restart your activity or restart nothing. So we actually have these three options in the toolbar.
Thanks.
Have the run button that essentially restarts your app. The next one is the apply changes button that restarts your activity and supports code and resource changes. And the next button to the right of it, it doesn't restart anything and it just applied code changes.
So it just kills the IDE.
That explodes. The next one explodes everything.
That's exactly what I wanted in Instant Run. Thank you.
Yeah, we added it for Romain basically because he had this OpenGL demo. And if we had to restart the activity in his app, that was a really, janky experience.
Yeah.
Whereas he just wanted to tweak the parameters while the whole chessboard was spinning, and with just apply code changes that work because your animation continued. It was like not noticeable except you got the visual.
Yeah, so that's the problem with restarting the activity. I mean, in a lot of apps, most activities, it's not going to be a big deal, but something that, for instance, has OpenGL, you're going to be loading like models and textures and creating a surface view. And so I was basically not saving anything because that was the slow part of the whole process.
So we discussed whether this was something we could detect, whether, you know, how far back we need to restart. But as we all know, it's really hard. It depends on the intention of the developer, where they are, what they want. So now the three buttons are there and they can choose.
Sorry, what's the distinction between the second and the third again? I missed that.
Restarting the activity or not.
Oh.
If you make resource changes, you need to push the middle button.
Okay.
And it has an implication on how quickly you see your changes, because for resources, one thing we do is, for all cases, first we try to apply the code changes. If they don't succeed, we abandon. If they succeed, then we carry on with the installation of the APK. Another difference with Instant Run is that we always install the APK. Even when you make only code changes, we install it in the background, because otherwise you end up with the situation that you have a different state between what's running and what is installed, and that causes a lot of problems.
Yeah, I've had that where, like, you know, you made an error in your code, you're in an Instant Run, the app crashes, you restart the app on the phone without clicking run in the ID, and then you have a different APK than...
Different code, and that caused a lot of confusion. So now in both scenarios, we install the APK, but the difference is when you make a resource change, we have to wait for the APK to finish installing, whereas when you only change code, We do install it, but you don't have to wait for it.
And Tor gave an example, like, let's say you have an activity and you have a running animation or, you know, drawing code, and you just want to tweak that drawing code or the animation. You don't want to restart the activity. You just want to click, you know, apply, and the next frame will pick up your change.
I can tell you why we were really hesitant to have the apply code changes only back in Instant Run 1. We're concerned that people will make a change and they'll press the button and they go like, well, why did it not change? If you just said like, hello world, in your set text, the code doesn't run again.
Yeah, you have to know what you're doing. And even with the activity restart, like if you cache anything in static fields or in another init path, like it's not going to, a code that doesn't run is not going to run.
Hot swapping is complicated, inherently complicated. So
it's not magical, example, right?
Yeah, for example, if you change the static initializer of a static variable, right? It will change the static initializer of the class and we will swap it. But obviously that code is not going to be run. So you would expect the static value to not change. However, static values are inlined. So the method that was inlining the previous value would have changed and we would swap it again. So you will be able to swap static variables. It sounds counterintuitive, but it works. Unless you swap a variable that is static, but it's not a native type, like it's not an int or string, in which case it will not be inlined and it will not swap.
I assume that entire paragraph of text is in the dialogue that comes up and asks the developer if they want to continue.
Sure. But what we will do, we are writing a blog post that will be probably out at the same time the podcast is out with all the details on why this happens. And you know, it's a complicated thing to do. So like Roman said, you have to know what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you have to understand like the code you're changing. What does it fit in the lifecycle of your application, and what do you need to rerun? And sometimes, you know, applying changes is probably not the right thing. Maybe you want to just rerun everything.
Yeah.
And so obviously, given its bytecode instrumentation, it only works for Java or Kotlin code. It's not going to work for native code, right?
Correct. If we detect changes on SO files, we cannot swap.
Okay.
So one of the questions that everyone would be curious about is how fast is it?
Good
if
question.
It's not
it's
instant?
Instant.
So how does it compare to, you know, best
we
case?
We considered calling it non-instant run, but it didn't
not quite work. Or pretty fast run.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what the purpose of this feature is to not lose state in the app.
Yeah.
So once we have the APK to be able to push and install on a P device, we're talking about on under Pi and above, or under, yeah, on P and above, not O and above. We're talking about 300 milliseconds to see your app running again.
Okay. So in the state, yeah, like you said, it can be very important. It's for me, a good example is AR. You're doing augmented reality and launching the app means, you know, typically you might have to accept a permission, then you have to like detect a plane, which can take some time depending on the lighting conditions. Then you have to add objects in the world and all that stuff. And every time you make a small change in your app, if you don't have something like apply changes, you have to go through all of that again. And it's extremely painful. So with this, like at least you don't have to go through the whole setup of like finding the planes, adding the objects, loading them.
But I don't want to be misleading when, you know, 300 milliseconds sounds really fast and people will hear this and say, cool, new apply change is really fast. And then they make a change to their app and they click and it takes 25 seconds to see their app because it takes time to build. So the same way you have to know how to use apply changes, you have to know what plugins to apply to your build and you have to be conscious of not applying, for example, non-incremental annotation processors that will essentially break your entire workflow if you want a fast iteration cycle. So being able to take care of your build is important. I've seen many large apps that have an iteration build step of 1 or 2 seconds. So it is possible to do that if you take care of your build of Gradle files.
Man, we should have somebody talk about Gradle on the podcast during that week that I'm gone.
Oh, I know the Gradle team is always working on making builds faster. In fact, we had some pretty good improvements recently that we saw on the dashboard.
Actually,
you know, taking out signing. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So one of the things we've been driving from InstaRun is to work very closely with the Gradle team, with our Gradle team, so that we can have a very fast iteration cycle. Mm-hmm. And we detected hotspots where we didn't hit for instant run one specifically because we were not building APKs, but on the building APK part, we were not doing it the best way, the best possible way. We were signing more than we could have. On APKs, we have version one signature and version two signature. And obviously for release builds, you want to sign with both because you don't know where the APK is going to end up. But for development builds, you can know whether you're targeting a device that supports version two signature or one. So you can just do one of those. Incremental signature was something that we never needed before, so we implemented it now. And all of this has improved the building APK step tremendously. It went down from something like 1.2 seconds on the MacBook Pro to 200 milliseconds.
So you're touching on something important. I don't know if during your Gradle episodes you talked about this, but like, you know, as someone who sometimes build apps and I don't spend a lot of time in Gradle, like I know enough about Gradle to be able to build my apps and run them. But, you know, it feels like it requires a lot of knowledge to do the right thing, especially when I need to write a custom task. It would be nice to have an episode where the do's and don'ts of Gradle to get like the fastest build times.
All right. We will have one when...
And I would like to be here because it sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I'm busy that time.
We've had the Gradle team on before.
I know, but I don't know if they talked about this or...
Yeah. We should.
All right, then. So back to today's episode.
Yeah, back to performance. So I know that you also did some work that has helped with the non-applied changes pipeline, right? That's just making deployment faster because you were looking at. So I think we had some issues around like the deploy speed push because of USB standards. You want to talk about that?
So yeah, we did a lot of analysis on how long it takes to push and install an app. One of the major bottlenecks was a performance optimization on the platform that would... it's called Dex2Out, that would compile all your DEXs again at install time. So every time you make a one-line change and you push all your DEXs to the phone, they would be recompiled again and reoptimized. So there's a flag in P that allows you to not do that. And that has brought large apps that used to take 35 seconds to install, went down to 1 or 2 seconds. So that's in P. Also, the USB cable that you use has a massive impact. So if you're using USB 2 versus USB 3, you can have seconds of delay to push an APK. So we are working in the studio to surface that information. Even if you have a hub on your computer, you buy a really expensive cable and you plug it into your hub, that's not a good idea.
A hardware solution.
Does
it also help if you like change the angle so that the bits are going down to the device?
The phone needs to be on the floor.
Yeah.
But no, okay. Please, I'm joking. Yeah. People don't try that. That's not going
to
work.
Right, because it's going to increase the upload time when you need to get information
from the
device.
Exactly, that's the actual reason why.
Yeah, you want it to be download time, not upload time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So all of that we will surface in the studio to, you know, teach one. You know, I didn't even know that my cable was not good enough. And
actually, can we detect that in the tool?
Yes. Okay. So you can detect the maximum speed of the bus and the negotiated speed of the bus. And then you can say, for some reason, your USB 3 capable port is running at this speed. So obviously, we cannot detect where the problem is in the middle. And we can also, through experiments, know how fast something should get to the phone. And if it's getting slower, we can say it's for some reason.
Yeah, we probably have rough ideas based on the size of an APK how long it should take.
So that's one, education and to the users and you know, surface this information. And the other one is the Delta Push. So we are also adding Delta Push to...
Delta Push.
To the normal pipe flow.
And speaking of surfacing this information to the user, you also reworked the run flow in the IDE, correct? The UI around it?
Yes. So... we, together with another team in studio, we changed how devices are chosen. So you, right now in 3.5, there is a dropdown next to the configuration that shows you the device. So when you click run, we already know the device you want to target. It used to be that you could run and there was a dialogue that popped up and let you choose the device, which made really hard to make build optimizations if you don't know the device you want to push to. But now the devices know beforehand. So as soon as you click run, we know which optimizations we can apply.
Okay. Anything else? What did we forget?
Any other like gnarly technical details that are really interesting that you think are completely beside the point?
I'd love to hear. Oh, many. So one of the things that it's interesting is we had to take care of our, there can be multiple processes running on an app. So when you swap, we don't just swap on the one process. So there are three or four different pipelines for, imagine you launch a service that uses your APK and you also are debugging at the same time another process. So what happens there is you could be on a breakpoint post on your main process and then you can have your other process running and you change a class and you want to hot swap. So here there are many different pipelines that happen. One is we send it to the phone for processes that don't have a debugger attached. And on those ones, we swap through the agent. For processes that you are on a breakpoint, we cannot even attach an agent because the agent needs to, the app is frozen. So yeah. Doing anything there wouldn't work. But the debugger itself, it's an agent and has the capability of swapping classes. So we go through the debugger in that case to swap the same changes. So in theory, modulus bugs, obviously, this should work if you have multiple processes running and they're all reading from the same APK. So that's another interesting technical detail. There was another one that it just escaped my mind.
So you're doing escape analysis.
Yes.
So what's the reception been like so far? Is it working for people?
It's working. So far, we've had several people tweeting saying that it worked. Now, before they couldn't work because they were using a framework like Dagger or something that would trip over before. So the reception has been positive. One tweet said the thing they like the most about it is that it's not magical, so that we don't make decisions for them and we just tell them what happened. So far, it's been only a week, but we have had positive feedback.
So you've had a week reception so far.
Right. Correct.
Okay. Right. I'm out. Anything else?
I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
And as always, you know, please download it, try it, and file bugs. That's the way we have to, the only way we have to know what the problems
but
are.
Hopefully they won't find bugs, but if you do file them.
But yeah. If you do find them, please don't keep them to yourself.
Yeah, it's really great when people try RCs and let us know, because it's sort of sad when people go, oh, they finally released 3.3, now let me try it. Oh, here's a bug.
Yeah.
You know, so we're speaking of that, we're about to release 3.3.1.
But it sounds like it's going to be helpful, the fact that apply changes is more explicit about what's going wrong and the fact that you have to tell it like what you want. I felt like, for instance, and I think you mentioned that a lot of people thought there were bugs when there weren't. It was a problem where we were trying to do as much as possible automatically. And if you don't really understand what's going on behind the scene, yeah, it feels like a bug. But
and one of the things we want to do is, now that we have the pipeline end to end, we're going to iterate over it and speed up all the parts that are slow. So this also having a conservative approach allows us to iterate much better.
Yeah, that's the thing about build systems. It's important to be fast, but it's more important to be correct.
Yes.
So you start with that one.
Yeah, we're going to compile your app really quickly. It may not work.
All right, well, thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, guys.